Space Shuttle, this is Flight Safety. This podcast may contain adult themes and language. Listener discretion is advised. Please keep your hands and arms inside the vehicle while in motion. You are clear for launch.
The following paragraphs are from Chapter 10 of a fan fiction titled Borderline Suspect by today's guest fan fiction writer, Sivakonia. Shemaya, his voice swept a shiver over her skin. Despite the warm summer air, she moved to turn, but Renzai's hand settled lightly on her shoulder and she froze beneath its touch, recalling too vividly how she'd stood with her back against his chest just two nights prior. Renzai, you've outdone yourself again. Her voice came steady, and she tried not to think about how the slightest shift of his hand would betray her pulse. Everyone will be talking about this one for years. I have no doubt. The smugness in his tone was nearly too much to bear. Shemaya was about to squirm out of his grip when light flared out of the corner of her eye, and Renzai wound his arm around her, encircling her. In his hand was one of the sparkling stars the dancers had held, trailing them through their turns like comets. Up close, the light was nearly blinding, but Shemaya could just make out the end of a thin metal stick. He held it like a flower, a glittering golden bloom, and Shemaya gasped in delight. So that's how it's done. This is like magic. I've never seen anything like it. The breath from Renzai's low laugh shifted her hair. Take it. It's quite safe. Shemaya hesitated, wary of the sparks, but slipped the stick from his fingers and held the sparkler out at arm's length. She gave it a wave, and light scattered a shimmering trail in its path. She looked up at Renzai, beaming. It's beautiful. His lips twisted in a smile, but his gaze shifted away from her, back towards Omar and Eugene. Shemaya wondered if her brother had noticed her all but wrapped in Renzai's arms. But the thoughts accompanying flash of anxiety came muted, outshone by the brilliant circle of light that enclosed them. The upper perimeter of the festival square lit up in a shower of glittering sparkles, and all attention returned to the scene beyond the overlook. The thin line of fire cut through the night and illuminated the entire square to a twilight glow, the tree at its center, its glowing branches finally fading as the last of the fireworks erupted overhead. Renzai's hand slipped from her shoulder. The music reached its crescendo, dancers whirled, the crowd cheered, and all at once, midsummer was over. The sky awash with smoke thick enough to leave Shemaya breathless. To the north, south, east, and west, four corners of the world. Greetings from the wild, arid desert of the American Southwest. I'm your host, Chaos Blue, and this is the Fanfic Maverick Podcast. Our special guest fan fiction writer today is Sivakonia. She has been a member of AO3 since 2012 and has 54 fan works posted for fandoms like Mad Max and the Cirque du Soleil fandom. She loves practicing circus arts, playing video games, hell yes, working on her freshwater aquarium, and seeing every type of live performance she possibly can. Sivakonia, welcome to FFM. How you doing today?
Good. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad that you are here. I just have to tell you right off the bat, and of course, we'll discuss this later, but I had the best time reading your fan fiction. I just have to tell you that, like, I don't even know who these people are, and I was enthralled, enchanted by this story. So I'm super excited to talk about it with you today. But of course, first, we have to go all the way back to the very beginning, because I want to know about your history with fan fiction. How did you discover fan fiction, and what was that like?
Yes. So my discovery was immediately dismissive. which I know sounds like a little intense, but my very first fandom, if you could even call it that, was Sailor Moon. You know, I watched it as a kid. I was probably like 8 or so. And then, you know, once I started getting online, as I got a little bit older, that was around a time where not all of the episodes for that show had been licensed yet. So as I was sort of exploring my first little entry into fandom, it was like, well, why would I want to read something that someone else made when there's like new stuff to discover that hasn't even been like released in the US yet? So I saw it. I didn't really see there was a need for it. Didn't really understand why anyone would pursue it. And it really wasn't until my mid-teens, I think, where I ran into Slash that I was like, okay, I'm back in. I am primed for this. I am ready.
The secret sauce.
Yeah, that was like a whole new world opened up. It was a very strong sense of like, holy shit, this is allowed? Like, you can do this? Not necessarily from just a content perspective, but that this sort of creativity expressed in this particular way. So at that point, I became all in. And that was after a period of thinking, who would need this? Turns out me, definitely a lot. And I'm so glad it's here.
Now, when you first encountered it, were you like actually reading it and then dismissing it and being like, nope, not for me? Or was it just the concept you were sort of rejecting?
Just the concept. I really didn't see why anyone would bother, which obviously has changed. So, yeah, didn't think anyone needed it. Didn't know why anyone would spend their time on it. And about half a developmental stage later, I became very aware.
Now, when you discovered Slash fan fiction, was that the first time you read fan fiction?
I think so. I'm sure I had clicked in and out of things a few times. But yeah, that's what really sticks with me most as like the turning point.
Yeah, when you actually clicked into something and like spent the time to read it all the way through. Oh, man. Do you remember like what that felt like?
It was just it seemed like an incredible act of generosity, honestly, for someone to spend so much time to do something for free. And then there was so much of it. It was so many people creating it. So it was welcoming. There are like some elements of it being overwhelming, like, oh my God, how do you know what you like? How do you find it? And like I said, those were like early internet days, probably like around peak LiveJournal era, where you had to go hunting for things a little bit, which was part of the fun, though, that you clicked into stuff. You're like, not for me. Go find another thing. But there was such a wealth of content that it was just a lot of fun to explore.
Yeah. Oh, and I love how you put that with the kind of an Easter egg hunt kind of a thing, because, God, you're so right about the LiveJournal days. Like, it was amazing and beautiful fan fiction came out of that era. But it was so hard to find stuff unless people were posting links to cool fan fiction on their LiveJournals. And you just sort of clicked around till you found something that resonated with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was kind of a gamble. Like, no one really tagged like they do on AO3 now, or if they did, it was very loosely. So you kind of got what you got, but it was a good way to explore your taste.
Do you remember being like involved with fandom on LiveJournal at that point? Like, were you talking to other people and having online friends and things, or was this sort of a solitary sort of activity for you?
No, I had friends. And I think even in my earlier like pre-fanfiction days, I was pretty involved in like message boards and things like that. So I was very used to talking to people in that context. And then LiveJournal was just the added element of like really getting to follow along with someone's life alongside these like fandom activities. So it was like a touch deeper, like in terms of connection. And yeah, you know, made some friends. That's when I started dabbling in writing a little bit. But was more of a reader at that time.
You know what's interesting about that whole thing? You know, before we hit that record button, we were talking a little bit about our recollections of how we grew up in the technology age, you know, where the internet was becoming this brand new thing and computers in the household were sort of this brand new thing, you know? So we had to learn all of this technology on our own. And I feel like, at least in our generation, at least with me, at least, like I remember adults, let's see, how do I put this? Adults in my life were constantly telling me, be careful on the internet. Don't talk to strangers. It's very dangerous, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I got that everywhere. You know, teachers would say that to me. My parents would say that to me. Like every, you know, the TV would say that to me. And so I think about it now and I'm like, man, it's a miracle that we even like talk to each other at all online and formed these like fandom communities and made fandom friends at that time, you know, because like everybody and their dog was telling us like, don't talk to strangers online, it's dangerous. So I just think that that's funny that we were the generation that got that message the strongest. And we were still out there talking to strangers on the internet and making connections and things like that.
Yeah, but I think there was a degree of anonymity back then that, I mean, I think a lot of people were just lying. I know I lied about my age, like, constantly. So, you know, you really just shared what you wanted to, whether it was real or not. And I think because we grew up with, like, all those PSAs and all that, you know, no one was telling you if you were a minor. Or if they were a minor, rather. And so you kind of just entered these spaces. And if you conducted yourself maturely, you know, you would be welcomed. You could participate. And nowadays, you know, the digital footprint is so much bigger. Everyone's real names are attached to, like, you know, if not their Instagram, their TikTok or whatever. Like, people are very findable in a way that just wasn't as possible back then. And I think that added a weird kind of safety, too. Like, despite all of those warnings, you know, you could feel pretty secure that if you didn't go telling people stuff you shouldn't, you're probably going to be okay. And that doesn't really exist anymore.
It doesn't. Yeah. As you say that, I'm thinking like people are so open now about how old they are.
Oh, I know. I think that's a huge mistake.
Yes. They're so open about telling you I'm a minor. It's like, why are you telling people that on the internet? Like,
right.
Didn't you get the PSA? Didn't the TV tell you not to?
Like, yeah. On. The only people that are going to care are like probably the ones who you shouldn't be talking to in the first place. Like, don't give them ammunition. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I feel very strongly about that stuff.
Yeah. No kidding. Oh, my God. It's crazy how much things have changed since, you know, we were youngsters. But, you know, that's interesting to me, like your whole kind of thing through fandom. You know, I know that we're going to be talking about Cirque du Soleil for a bit later on in the show. And you had also mentioned to me that you were a Snary shipper about 10 years ago and just recently got back into it. So I know that's part of your fandom journey. And, you know, you mentioned Sailor Moon. I was just wondering if there were other parts about your journey through various fandoms, like what has that looked like for you?
Yeah. So, yeah, Sailor Moon was first, kind of message board world. Didn't think fan fiction was necessary in any part of this world. Dead wrong. Didn't discover that until around 14, 15, when I think I was on LiveJournal. That's when I discovered Slash. It wasn't Harry Potter. It was actually, have you ever seen that Teen Titans animated show?
I have, yeah.
That thing is nuts. If you rewatch that today, you would be like, how is this allowed on TV? Like,
I know, it was
some
so dark.
Some parts are very dark, very aggressive. And that's why I first discovered Slash, which, like, we'll get into it later, but, like, I'm kind of a problematic shipper. I like, my ship then was Slade Robin, and it's like this grown-ass evil adult grooming a young teen, as stated by the title of the show. But, you know, that's what I found. And I was like, oh, this is fun and mysterious. And I think it's a similar dynamic that led me to Snary, because I also loved Harry Potter at the time. The difference was that Harry Potter was so huge. That is one of the elements that felt pretty overwhelming, that you didn't really know where to go. There's so many people. There's so much to read. And then I found my niche. And so ended up with Snary. Took a break, I think, for a couple of years. That was when I rediscovered, discovered Cirque du Soleil, seeing a live show, and the dynamic of that fandom was unlike anything I'd seen before. Like actively discouraging fan works and engaging with the shows and the content in a way that I had been familiar with from Harry Potter, just completely different. So that kind of put a pause on all of that. So even though I was really involved in fandom, fan works themselves were not even on the agenda. Got really inspired when Mad Max came out a few years ago, wrote a bunch for that in a way I never had before. And then after that, I was like, okay, I'm in a writing mood. How come nobody writes for Cirque? Like, fuck it, let's just start doing it. And that's kind of like the journey of how I came to actually write for a fandom that at the time I'd already been in for about 10 years.
Did that feel super, like, forbidden and subversive to you when you made that decision?
It did. Cirque fandom was and is very, very small. And especially when I entered it, which was probably around, say, like 2007 or 8 or so. Again, this is still like an early social media world. So there was no behind-the-scenes content. there was no like following the artist on Instagram or anything. Like if you knew anything about it, it's because you had frankly paid an exorbitant amount to go see it. And for many people, that's like a once in a lifetime experience. And so the way the fandom was set up was like, you couldn't know unless you showed up. And then if you showed up enough times, you would meet the right people. And if you met the right people, you would learn more. So it had this kind of like mysterious, secretive, very gatekeepy element to it.
I was going to say, that sounds like an exclusive club.
It was, yeah. And like, not necessarily in a fun way, truthfully, because there were some very strong opinions of, you know, how you conducted yourself in this fandom. And like I said, it was very discouraging of fan works. This was supposed to be like a niche artistic interest, and engaging with it like you would a Harry Potter or anything else was kind of unseemly. It was a very unusual fandom experience compared to what I was familiar with at the time.
Okay, so it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when you were in that group, it sounds like you were the only one who wanted to engage with it in that way.
It felt like that a lot, yeah. And I think it was because I was quite a bit younger. Again, because this was such an extensive hobby, to go see it very often was not something that was within the realm of possibility for me in like high school and college. So it was just a lot of people who could afford to see these shows a lot, get to know some of the artists. And to their credit, there was a forum where all of this existed at the time called Cirque Tribune. Absolutely incredible resource. It was a lot of people posting show reviews, tour updates, things like that. But it also had like a wiki element where you could track tour schedules, act changes across all these different shows, which singer sung in which cities, and here's an audio sample of her, like really incredible level of detail for information that was very difficult to find unless you were already really entrenched in that world. So, you know, you kind of put up with the elitism to get that quality of information because it simply was not available anywhere else. And those are the people who are setting the rules. And if they say it's like cringe and embarrassing to be like drawing fan art of this, or certainly not for writing fic of it, then you just go along with it.
Wow. Wow. So at this time, were you searching then for other people who may have already written fan fiction? Were you like out there searching to see if anybody else had done it?
I had looked for it. There was a smattering of it. It would be one of those things where you're like, oh, this was written 5 years ago, and then no one ever touched it again. A handful of things like that. I think I wrote a couple things at the time, and certainly didn't tell anyone on that forum about it. I just, you know, let it exist. I think it must have been on LiveJournal. Let it exist. And, you know, the right people find it. You get like two comments. Great. Love it. But like, they can't find out, because if they find out, they're going to know that I'm like not the kind of fan that they want. And it's going to be embarrassing. And then I'm not going to be able to get this information and participate in this way, the way that I really appreciate, even though it's like a little toxic. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
They kick you out of the secret club. Yeah. Yeah, you didn't want that. You did not want that. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. And I think that that's just so fascinating that this did happen, like you said, in that very particular era where, you know, we didn't have the access to things that we do now. I think about that all the time, about how that's changed in fandom spaces, about how we have so much access now to things, I guess, in fandom, like especially like it's a requirement now as a celebrity to have an Instagram and a Facebook and probably a Twitter. I mean, like, you know, like people actually get jobs now based on like how much social media following they have. So it's like this thing. So, you know, people feel very connected these days, you know, to the content that they love and the canons and the fandoms that they love, because they feel so like close to the artists and the creators and show producers and all of that. It's kind of a crazy thing, right? Where back in the day, we didn't have access to any of that shit. Like if you had access to it, that was like a special, unusual story to tell people at like, you know, a dinner party or something.
Right. And in that way, I think that lack of connection actually ended up serving Cirque fandom very well. Because back then, I want to say like mid-2000s or so, it really wasn't like the entertainment machine that it is today. And that was something fans at the time, and I still feel strongly about, that the quality of shows has changed since they grew and grew. And, you know, there's this big global presence now. Certainly not everyone in the world has seen it, but most people have heard of it by now. And at the time, that wasn't the case. And that sort of added to the mystique of this high-end artistic circus. today, you know, to think back on it, had we been looking at like behind the scenes or how to do your makeup, like we wouldn't have really liked that content back then because we liked not knowing. We liked the mystery. And then it sort of brought you into that inner circle if you started to know more. When it's publicly available, you know, it's like inflation. The currency is just not worth as much. So
yes.
it was
scarcity,
really
right?
Fun. Yeah, it was really fun when they're, if you knew it was like kind of secret. And it's interesting to have seen the company develop kind of alongside the way social media has, because it does feel a little more shallow now than it used to. Because sometimes you can know too much. I think they're treading into that territory.
Yeah. Probably applicable to most things in life, too. I feel like we know too much, you know,
yeah.
On some levels. It's like everywhere. It's out there. It's like, oh, my God, you know.
And I can complain about it, but I'm like not going to stop seeking it out. I'm not going to not know. So there's an extent I do it to myself.
Oh, I know. And I'm the same way, too. Like, on the one hand, I'm railing against it and being like, this is too much. And then on the other hand, I'm like checking my Instagram like every day to see.
Right.
Ooh, did my favorite people update or post a new picture? Like,
yeah.
You know, like I'm guilty just as much as the next guy. But it is fascinating to see that change. So you mentioned the year 2007. So it's safe to say that you've been in this fandom for like, I mean... What is this? What, 17 years?
Is that possible? Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say because it does feel like there've been these two big phases of fandom. So, like, yeah, have I been following it? Have I been very interested? Have I seen every show I could since, yeah, probably 2007? Yes. Were there phases of my life where that was completely impossible, like due to finances? Yeah, I wasn't going as much in college, but now I'm in a phase of life and be like, oh, I'm going to go to Vegas and see like three shows in a week. That's great. I've really landed in a very lucky place for a Cirque fan. But yeah, it doesn't feel like 17 years because that era where that Cirque Tribune Forum controlled everything ended very abruptly in 2012, where coincidentally on April Fool's Day, the guy running it was just like, oh, I'm going to be done with this. And it was just gone.
Oh my God.
Yes. Like all of this, that huge wiki, all that detailed information, these contacts that you didn't have anywhere else because they were too elitist for like live journal on your social media platform, gone. And so at that point, I was like, oh my God, this is a loss. Like the fandom was fragmented, but those people you could find felt the loss acutely. And there was sort of a rebuild era where, you know, I tried to start a forum called Cirque Spotlight, kind of took off, but we never had all that information that the wiki held. We never, you know, attracted the same core group of people that ran the other message board. And so that kind of faded, eventually moved to Tumblr, where I said, okay, well, I miss sort of like the encyclopedia of knowledge that Cirque Tribune had. I'm just going to try and recreate that as best I can. So I kind of turned my Tumblr into a repository for just like a ton of pictures of shows. And anytime I saw one, I would write a very detailed review, like act by act breakdown, because that's what I knew and what I liked. And I wanted at least a place to remember that, even if all my previous work and the reviews and comments from everybody else had been lost when we lost that forum. And so from there, I kind of just, you know, people would be like, oh, my God, I didn't know people talked about this. Or, oh, I saw this show when I was a child. I can't believe it's still around. Started, like, talking to new people. And from there, it grew into a Discord server that I now run. And that has finally become the fandom hub that I always wanted. That's really welcoming of FanWorks, really welcoming to new members. And so I've been very lucky to be part of this shift in the fandom dynamic, because I missed what we lost, but I didn't want to do that again. It was miserable. And I wanted to be more welcoming and more fun. So that's when it changed a little bit.
That's amazing. You have been a trailblazer in this fandom.
It didn't feel like it at first, but when we get new people, like I do have all these stories from the mid-2000s, they were like being born for. You know, it's fun. So we were talking about fandom elders earlier, and I sort of have become one by accident, and they can't tell me I'm wrong because all of that stuff is gone.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you can actually say I was there.
Yes, I was
ago,
there.
You know,
yeah. And what's been nice is that over time, we've reattracted some people that I knew 15 years ago, like names that I remember and respected. We've still found them. They're still around. They're still doing the same stuff, still following Cirque. And that has been a really pleasant and unique experience to reconnect with them.
It's come full circle for you in some respects. And that feels so special when you think about it like that, you know, when things come full circle that way. Man, this is amazing. Like, I'm just amazed and so impressed at how you have been so active and try to keep this alive. And you've been so active in like creating welcoming spaces, especially like you said, creating the space you always wanted to see, being the change you wanted to see in the world and just doing it yourself. And I think that that's beautiful. And I'm sure that so many people in your community are so grateful that what you built exists. I just want to take a moment here to like acknowledge that and celebrate that and be like, that's so awesome.
Thank you.
That's so awesome that you were able to do that. It's kind of funny because I did have a couple of questions in here later on about, you know, how did you get into Cirque and, you know, all of that stuff. And you sort of answered that, you know, seeing the show, you were involved in 2007. I guess like going along with that same train of thought, I'm curious to know what it is that you fell in love with Cirque, like why Cirque?
I don't know. To sit through a show is, it's an all senses experience, I think. And you are welcomed into this world where you're told very little. You know, many times they don't have names. You know, they're certainly not speaking English. They're not speaking any real language at all. They make up, they call it Cirque-ish, but it's like a gibberish language that they speak. So when they speak, they're really not saying anything you can understand. And you have to apply so much like external experience and emotion to it that creates a uniquely personal experience, at least for me. So you might be looking at something extraordinary, seeing things you've never seen a human body do before, but it exists in this broader context that you feel very welcomed into, I think. And that's a sort of element that made it just completely impossible for me to look away after I saw my first show. And then from there, it just became, okay, if it's in town, I'm absolutely going. If it's then later in life, if it's in a town where a friend lives, I'm just going to go and make them come. So it's been, it feels like equal parts, like kind of being a, you know, someone who follows a band around a little bit. And then also like a Broadway fan where you become familiar with the cast and how they play things in different ways. But you also get to see it a little more often than like if you just visited New York, you know, every couple of years or something like that, because there are at any given time like 15 to 20 shows touring or in residency around the world. So it's findable. Once it's on your radar and you decide you care a lot, it's more findable than people think.
Man, oh, that's amazing. That's so amazing. And then, of course, I'm sure, you know, people say that they fall in love with things, whatever it is, whatever the fandom is, they fall in love. And then the experience is enhanced by the community of other people who also love the same thing, right? And you just get to gush about it and get excited about it and, you know, explore all of the different facets of the fandom with these people. And it sounds like you have done a tremendous job of creating that for yourself and for others. You kind of talked about being in your small, tight-knit community of fandom folks and how amazing it is and how you guys really have cultivated this wonderful sense of community. And I was just wondering if there were like more things you wanted to say about that. What has that experience been like?
It's just been a pleasure, honestly. And it's like, I can't even really take credit for starting this Discord. Someone else did, invited me to help, but then they just dropped off the face of the earth. So right now I am the only admin, but I didn't start it. So I didn't build these four walls, but I've been kind of like, you know, maintaining them, holding them up. But the people it's attracted have just been phenomenal. I think everyone just feels really lucky to find their people again in a fandom that you wouldn't think exists at all. I admire so much how creative and passionate they are, not just for Cirque and not just for their own works, but just generally some really phenomenal artists, really phenomenal writers, just genuinely great people. And I feel really grateful to get to talk to them every day about clowns, you know, about something so niche. And one element that I think has been very critical is making it a welcoming space for young people. So there are people under 18, there are people over, where we have distinctive channels if you're going to be talking about, you know, not stuff for under 18s. But a lot of them say that it feels like a very safe space. And I'm really, really proud of that, that they can come as they are, sometimes in a time of transition, like identity or just in life or whatever, and still come back to this one thing and the same people and still feel supported. That, I think, is not something that is readily achievable in most bigger fandoms. Like, you got to have this tight-knit group, and you have to hold the line on the way you conduct yourselves. Like, you come in, we welcome you as you are. As you grow, maybe that changes, maybe you come and go from fandom, but give them the space to do that. And that doesn't really have anything to do with discussion of actual shows. That's just community building. And that's sort of how it carries on. Because again, this is still an expensive hobby. There's a lot of fandom knowledge that was lost. These younger people aren't going to know about it unless you create a space where they can ask questions and engage in a way that they feel comfortable. And, you know, anyone who's trying to, you know, build a tiny fandom or something like that, that would be my greatest advice, is just get the young people in there. They want to learn, you know, make sure everyone's polite, make sure everyone's welcoming, but that's essential. I'm very proud of that element.
Yeah, and you should be. You really should be. Because, you know, I think you're right about some of the larger fandoms. Like, I have, I'm not on Discord a lot, you know, it's just not a thing that I do very often. But I am, you know, by happenstance in a few Discord servers here and there. And they tend to be very big, and it's so easy to get lost. You know, it's so easy, like nobody knows who you are in there unless, you know, you get lucky or you've been there since the beginning or whatever. So it is really easy in some of the bigger fandoms to just be lost in the crowd. But it sounds like you've been able to create this community of people where it's such a personal, almost intimate experience.
Yeah, it can be.
Yeah, just people aren't getting lost in the crowd. And like you said, a welcoming space for the young people, where they don't feel judged. They don't feel like, oh, this is so toxic in here, you know, because that's what they're going to encounter in some of the other corners of fandom. That's
right.
Just going to happen.
And that's what it was like 10, 15 years ago. Sick of it. Done with it. Like, let's create a place where they can just come in, and maybe they've never seen a show at all. They just like the look of it. Great.
Yeah.
You know, here's a million bootlegs for you. Come on in. That's not something that existed in earlier fandom, and now we can. So I try to lean on that as heavily as I can.
Oh, and I love that. You remember your elitist experience from before. And while there were like awesome things that happened for you in those spaces, you know, you remember what that felt like. And you're like, we're not going to do that
here. We're not. No.
Yeah. So it's not this gatekeepy thing where you have to love it a certain way. People can just come and love it in whatever way they want to, and that's perfectly fine. And I think that that's so healthy, and that's so beautiful. And you know what? These young people are going to remember this experience. They're going to remember this, and they're going to go forward in their lives, and maybe they'll be in fandom for 20, 30, 40 years.
Right.
And maybe they will create their own spaces.
Right. Like I said before, like, I remember people, they turned up 15 years later. My favorite story about all of this was, it was probably like 2009. I baited some Cirque fic for someone I'd never met before. I think it was on like fanfiction.net or something. And 10 years later in 2019, they found a repost of one of my works that had been on LiveJournal, and I moved it over to AO3. And they said, oh my God, I remember this from LJ. And we talked for like two comments and realized this was the person that I had baited for 10 years ago.
Oh my God.
Who still remembered what I wrote. I still remember working with them. I think they had just recently posted something new. So we reconnected. They ended up joining the server, and they and I joke that, you know, that was like a marriage ago. That was a gender ago. Like, so many things have changed since we had initially connected. And it's that feels very unique too. That I think that's something that could only happen in a very, very small fandom.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I feel like even though the internet is such a vast place, fandom can be such a small world sometimes.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
And that just baffles. And I adore it. I adore it, all at the same time. It's baffling and just exciting and wonderful. But speaking of fandom, though, I'm curious about your opinions on fan fiction. I love to ask everybody, especially folks who, like, I love how you first started out thinking, you know, and I can understand this. You were young when you first encountered it and being just like, why would anybody do this? This is so weird. And then like fell in love with it, you know, a couple of years later. I love that. So I imagine that your thoughts on fan fiction have evolved and changed over the years since you've been in it for so long. So I'm just wondering, like, for fan fiction, what are your top three reasons that you love fan fiction just in general?
Top three. I mean, number one, just like, name a clear expression of love for a piece of media. that you would put in so much time to mull it over, think about it, and then make something new, not even really for yourself, but so you can share in that interest with someone else. That I just think is phenomenal. It's a real act of love and generosity to participate in fan fiction, especially as a writer. And especially knowing that there is no guarantee of eyes, which I have learned abundantly in Cirque fandom. Very, very small audience pool there. But people still feel like they have to do it, you know? No one does this for any guarantee of attention. They just have something to say and they're hoping someone else looks at it. I think that's wonderful. And I also really love the sort of the developmental nature of the works as both a commenter and a writer. I didn't really start writing anything multi-chapter until I wrote for Cirque, but there was a time where things completely changed direction because someone had commented something. Or like one comment will then just immediately inspire 20,000 more words than I expected. And I love that back and forth, that a writer can do something, but depending on the feedback they get, whether it's like midstream or not, can totally change. And, you know, you don't usually get like a whole team of editors. And well, I guess you get like an editor and a team in traditional publishing. But this is different, where you can say, oh, actually, people want to see this, or I didn't think of that because someone made some random prediction in the comment. And that can help you create a better story for them. I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah. Crowdsourced art, you know, mm-hmm. a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is just so phenomenal because, again, it's involving that community aspect.
Yep, definitely. And then a third reason? I don't know. You told me to come up with three and I only came up with two.
No, it's all good. I just chose three at random. But no, I think that those two reasons are beautiful. And I love that you started with love. Yeah, I talk about fan fiction all the time on the show, obviously. I'm thinking about fan fiction all the time in my real life, you know, as I go about my day. And the number one thing that always comes up for me talking about it or thinking about it is just love. Love is literally the force binding the universe together. And it is the force that we use to create things that did not exist before. And so when we are creating anything, we are putting something of ourselves into the universe, you know, and putting it out there. And it's just imbued with this love. And I think that anytime we put love out into the universe like that, that's a beautiful thing. And it matters. I love that you led with that.
I hope that's how like actual creators feel like, you know, real authors and showrunners and things like that. I'm sure to them it seems a little unusual to see their own characters like repurpose and then doing all these things. But I hope 9 times out of 10 that it's taken as a positive, that somebody liked this so much they thought, okay, I'm going to sit here for thousands of words and just do more with it. I always wonder how people feel about that.
You know, I have thought about that too, and I have the same hope that you do. You know, because like I've been in fan fiction for so long that probably the way that I think about it is biased at this point, right? Because I've always thought if I ever created something original and somebody wanted to make art or fan fiction off of it, I would be so immensely flattered by that because you know that you have touched a chord, you have resonated with somebody enough that, like you said, they took time out of their life, their finite life, to spend creating something around what you created and wrote. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying?
For free.
Yeah, for free, you know? And so like, you know, when you resonate that deeply with somebody, you've done something tremendous artistically, you know, when other people feel compelled to respond to you in an artistic way. So I've always felt like I would be so flattered by that if I was a creator and somebody wrote fan fiction of my stuff. But I guess you never know. Sometimes I think it's a generational thing. Sometimes I think it's just a misunderstanding of what fan fiction is or whatever.
Right.
So we're probably a little bit biased there just because yeah. we know what's up.
We're already locked in.
But yeah, I always tell people who aren't fan fiction people, I'm like, you can always tell what resonated with people by going to AO3 and just checking how many works are posted to that fandom. Uh-huh. You can tell. Like, my brother was complaining one time about that movie Avatar, the James Cameron movie.
Yes, yeah. Oh, yeah. Isn't that the one that has like no fix compared to like the amount of money it made at the box office?
Yeah. At the time that we had this conversation, I actually pulled it up mid-conversation. And at that time, that tag had less than 1,000 works posted to it.
That is
less
shocking.
Less than 1,000. And yeah, I was shocked because I was like, wait a second, like all of the critics say this is so critically acclaimed and so amazing and wonderful. And yet.
I mean, that seems like ripe for like a self-insert OC. Like, I'm really surprised to hear that it was that few. Even if you didn't like love the plot, didn't people love the world? That's interesting.
I don't know. All I know is that it only resonated with enough people to generate about 1,000 works. And to me, I'm looking at that going, oh, well, you know, something about this just didn't resonate with fandom as strongly as probably they would have hoped. And I look at other shows that way, too. And I know that's probably like a really like crappy, biased way of going about things sometimes. But it's just something that I do. I look at shows and then I think, I wonder what the fandom fan fiction scene looks like. And I'll go check. Yeah. And you can always tell, you know.
Yeah. I think there's an element, too, of I don't want to criticize any media because I know especially big fandoms, like they're popular for a reason. But I think sometimes things get extra popular because there's so much to say that you would change. Like you love elements, but you need to add or you need to fix something. And maybe Avatar didn't have a lot of room for that. They're like, okay, thanks for the complete world. Bye. But it was just not very nuanced or complex story. So that might be why people didn't dig into it the way we might with less popular media or in some ways more flawed media. There's just not a lot of fertile ground there that you might see elsewhere.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like there are so many different aspects and elements to reasons why people choose to go that route to create fan fiction for whatever piece of canon it is. I'm sure that people much smarter than me have already dug into this and talked about this on other shows and other podcasts and stuff. So I'm just, you know, for me, it's just an antidote of, oh, look, you know, this one doesn't have very many fan works posted to it. And I want to state this, you know, that just because a particular fandom doesn't have a lot of fanfics posted to it does not mean that it's not good. I mean, obviously, we are talking today about Zerk, which doesn't have a lot of fanworks to it. But the ones that do exist, amazing.
Yeah. Yep. Very true. Yeah. I want to be very clear about that.
Yeah. Let's be clear about that. So I told you at the beginning of the show, I was so enchanted by your fanfiction. It's called Borderline Suspect. And this is a Zerk fan fiction. And, you know, I know nothing about Zerk. I've heard of it. So when you mentioned it, I was like, oh, yeah, I know what that is, theoretically. but I've never seen it. I don't know anything about it. So I remember going into this fan fiction kind of just like very curious to see what the experience would be like for me as somebody going in 100% fandom blind. You know, I do that with the show quite often. And I was so enthralled by this story from the very beginning. I have to say, like, at least 80% of that is your writing. My God.
My jaw is on the floor right now. Thank you so much.
My God. Yes. Like, I was enchanted by your writing style. As I was going through it, I was thinking, you know, this feels more like that show, Don't Tell, kind of a thing. And I like all kinds of writing, all styles of writing. I love like so many different things. But this definitely had more of a show don't tell quality to me as I was going through it. And that just worked so well for this story.
Like, I'm so pleased to hear you say that because that's all Zerk is. They're not talking to you. They have to show everything. So I'm so glad that came through.
Yes, you captured that so well.
Thank you.
I was just like, oh my God, what are they going to do next? And you do give us tiny little insights here and there of, you know, maybe what's going on a little bit in the character's head or what they're thinking, but just enough. I mean, it's breadcrumbs, really, you know? And it just worked. It worked. And I was on the edge of my seat the whole entire time. This is like 24 chapters, okay? Edge of my seat the entire time going like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? There was one night when I actually stayed up way later than I should have because I was hoping to get to the end and I didn't because I'm a slow reader. So I had to go to bed late and then pick it up the next day.
Oh, I am beaming. Thank you so much.
It was so good. It was so good. And, you know, for somebody going in fandom blind, I also felt like you did this tremendous job of like acquainting me with these characters enough that I cared. I cared a lot about what was going on with some of these, like,
I'm,
you know,
so glad
people.
To hear that. Because I'm aware, too, that I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of people are not going to behave about Zerk the way I do. They're not going to go. They're not going to be like multiple shows a year. This might be something they only see once. And I really wanted to draw on like what would stand out the most from their memory. Because again, seeing a Cirque show is like seeing a fever dream. You don't know what's going to stick with people and what won't. So I wanted to preserve as much as I could and like remind them of what they saw without being pedantic. And then also saying like, okay, now I want to show you a little bit more. So, oh, I'm so glad that came through. Thank you.
Yeah, it was amazing. I loved it. This was a great experience for me. And I have so much more to say about it. But first, before I do that, what inspired the writing of this? Like, why did you want to write it in the first place? Briefly tell us what it's about. And then what themes were you exploring here with the story?
Sure. So one thing to note just for context. So Cirque du Soleil is a broader company with multiple shows around the world. The one that this fic is based on is called Ka. It's a resident show in Vegas. And it's different from your typical Cirque show because it has a pretty coherent plot compared to most shows that are a little like, you know, a broader theme like Stranger in a Strange Land. And now you're looking at acrobatics. By contrast, Ka has a clear plot line, very distinct characters. And in that way, it was a lot easier to write for than your average Cirque show. So that was one piece. The other was that I just latched onto this one character and I was like, I got to spend more time with this guy. His name is the counselor's son. He doesn't have a real name in the show. And I wouldn't even call him the main antagonist nor main character, but he is the cornerstone of the whole show's plot, basically. If you took him out, you could take out anyone else, but if you took him out, you would not have the same show. And just to give a quick summary, basically, it's about a twin brother and a twin sister. They live in like this big kind of Pan-Asian inspired royal palace. A celebration is attacked. Their parents are killed. They are sent into exile and they have to find each other to reunite their kingdom, basically. You've got your good guys on one side and then the bad guys who ran the siege, the attack on the palace. And Counselor Sun, one of the bad guys. There's a separate love triangle where the twin brother falls in love with the woman that he's in love with. So he sets off this major coup that starts infighting within the, you know, the bad guy side. And long story short, he becomes the instrument of his own destruction. This thing that he created, it's sort of like, it's basically gunpowder, does blow up in his face during a final battle and he goes blind. And then the show ends with him using that same kind of gunpowder adjacent compound to create a giant fireworks display that signifies the end of the show. So I wanted to spend more time with this guy because he's very charismatic and he's just like kind of a dick. And something about like this one character trope, same reason I love Snape. I just love a thin, dark, kind of miserable guy.
You know, it's so funny that you say that because as I was reading Rensai, that was the experience that it was for me too, because I found myself like, I don't know, drawn to a lot of like the villainous characters in various fandoms and things like that. So when you were talking earlier about like dark trope fan fiction and like, you know, bad guys and stuff like that, I was like, Rensai? Like, I've seen this before. Like, I can see it. Okay.
Yeah, he's honestly like, he's like if Snape had self-esteem and like a privileged background. Yes. They're very similar. If he's just in a better mood, they would be very similar. So yeah, he's this just really clever, charismatic guy. But he's a dick. He's very selfish. And basically the final battle occurs because he's, you know, he loses the girl that he's in love with, probably because they were a bad match, you know. So this is the information we have to work with. And I really enjoyed his relationship with the chief archer's daughter. That's the girl that he loses. In the fic, she's called Diogene. But I didn't want to take away the actual canon romance of the show, which is the twin brother and the chief archer's daughter. So I was like, okay. Let's imagine a world where the show is over, you know, kingdoms are united. Let's see what we can do with him. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would be over it too quickly. He seems like the kind of person who would not really take no for an answer until you like put a neon sign in his face that said, I don't love you. And I wanted to get him to that point, but I also wanted to explore what he would look like if he was involved in a romance with someone else. So I brought in the twin sister, whom I named Jimaya. They, in the show, I think they share maybe 5 minutes of total stage time together. Like these two, this is like, I could not imagine a rarer pair. Like, you know, the really expensive clown show. Okay. Take those two characters. They don't interact, but I'm telling you, just listen. They could definitely be a couple. That was my approach for this whole fic.
Yeah, you really had to craft that, huh?
I did. I couldn't get out of my head, though. So for this fic, what I wanted to do was explore him a little bit more and show that even though for the purpose of the show he was redeemed, if we looked at him as an actual person, as an actual character, he probably didn't do all the work that he had to do. And so I put him with the twin sister to sort of help him get to that point, not so that he could win another love with another woman, but so he could understand the consequences of his behavior. So ultimately, the fic doesn't really have a happy ending. It's like kind of neutral because I think he deserved it. You know, one big grand gesture is not enough to redeem him for his actions during the plot of the show. So I wanted to make a little bit more of a personal story about that. He's on the road to redemption, but he's not quite there.
Yeah, and that fascinated me so much because, like, it's so funny how you say he's the cornerstone, right, of the actual show. You know, you take him out, there's no plot, which is so funny to me because I feel like, yeah, you definitely had him as the cornerstone of this whole fic too, right? Where it's just like, what is going to happen here? Like, I found myself vacillating pretty extreme directions depending on what chapter I was reading because like you do such a good job of like showing us pretty much right off the bat like he's a dick, like
he's a dick but he's also like really fun to be around. And if you are a young empress whose parents just died, you know, thrust into this new role, you probably want someone who wants to bring you down to earth a little bit, give you some perspective and give you a break of all of these new pressures, which is why Jimaya finds herself so attracted to him.
Yeah, and I can understand that from her perspective. I really can. I enjoyed that whole interaction. I thought it was so interesting how well you humanized him for me. Because at first he comes off as this dick and you're just like, oh, you know, he's a dick. And he is, you know, like you can absolutely see that. But you slowly drag us along this story with him and Eugene. At first, I wasn't sure if they had some sort of past. Like, what is that past? Like, what's going on here? And then there's this certain chapter that I can't even remember which chapter it is, where you realize that he loves her. And it's pretty clear that it's not just him, like, pretending. It's not just him doing it because, like, he's trying to get ahead or something. Like, he might be with Jemaya. But, like, with Eugene, he loved her. There's this gorgeous line. You put some gorgeous lines in here. I just have
Thank
to tell you.
You.
Like, not only is the writing so sharp and so good, but there are these beautiful lines. And there was this line here in chapter, I think it's chapter 21. So it's kind of like farther along in the story, but I have to read this because it's so good. But it's Renzai talking and he goes, "How long have I loved her?" he asked, voice dry. Impossible to say. Years. Every season, every month. Every moment for years, but time was immeasurable with someone like Eugene resting at the center of it. I loved, loved, loved that line. And I think when you humanized him for me by showing how deeply he was in love with Eugene, like even though the rational part of my brain knows that he's not a great guy and he's like really horrible, I cared because he loved somebody, because his heart was capable of that. Does that make sense? Like, it's such a weird thing to say, but like, I cared about him because he loved somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so glad you liked that. Because that's exactly what I wanted to illustrate. In the show, they only have so much time. It's a huge theater. Because of the medium, everything has to be painted in really broad strokes. Like, it's very obvious how you're supposed to feel for each of these people. And it's like, oh my God, he's a good guy. Fantastic. Let's move on. No. He really seemed to me like the kind of person who was capable of love, but was maybe not so capable of recognizing why it wasn't returned to him.
Yes, yes. It was this very like one-sided thing where I felt like when they finally have that conversation, him and Eugene, about their actual feelings, I did get the sense that he was a little baffled, you know, to learn that his strong feelings for her weren't necessarily like returned.
Right. Or just not returned in the right way. Like, I think she did love him a little bit, but I think she was a real challenge to write because I really didn't want to make the whole plot hinge on her, like, just not being upfront about her feelings. So what I really tried to do was create her in such a way that she thought she had done everything she could. But she was so concerned with preserving peace among this like newly reformed kingdom that she just didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings anymore. And so it became very difficult for her to reiterate to him that, like, no, you don't get it. Like, I love someone else now. You and I are done. Because, you know, his father had died. Like, you know, all these things that had happened. It was really hard for her to admit that. And so it just went on for a little too long. She was a little too weak to reinforce it clearly. And he was a little too weak to understand that, like, no, this is clearly not going to work out. He could not let it go. And so he kind of puts himself in this situation. And he hurts other people in the process because, again, he's still very selfish.
Yes. Yes. And I love that you didn't shy away from that. Because, you know, I read all kinds of stories with bad guys in them. And I like the redemption ones just fine, where they get to that point at the end of the fic and things are good and everything. But I love that for, you know, for this one, you just wanted to show us this like little window into like a certain part of his journey through that, you know, because I don't think he ever really gets to that part in this fic where he really, truly realizes and understands the impact that his actions had, not just with these people in the fic, but also his past actions as a slaver, as, you know, doing all of these horrible things to people that he clearly doesn't care about or even sees as human beings, you know.
Right. And he admits that outright. And everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
There's no way Jemiah knows this.
Yes. Yeah. Several times he just comes out and says it. And he's like, yeah, this is how I think. And he never really changes his mind in this fic. So I love how you like leave it open at the end where, you know, his story's not done. He's not dead or anything. You know, he's not an old man either. So he has presumably a long life ahead of him to potentially like get there at some point. Just not here with this story. And I was fascinated with that. I thought you did a really great job with Eugene. I'm not saying that correctly.
Eugene, like it's like a softer J. But again, like it doesn't really matter. None of these names are real. I want to be clear. I made up all of these names.
Yeah, I figured that you had because I was like, I don't think these characters have names.
They do not.
No, I love these names. But, you know, she came off as complicated to me. Obviously, like Renzai is kind of complicated to me too, but Eugene absolutely complicated in this beautiful way where I didn't feel like she was sneaky or deceitful the way Renzai was, you know, but I absolutely got this sense that she was trying to hold things together in the best possible way that she could without causing more harm. And that put her in these really awkward situations where she had to be really careful and step so carefully. And I really felt for her, you know, as she was going through this whole experience, because I could see that her heart was good and she was coming from a good place, but it was just really complicated. So that in turn sort of made her feel complicated to me. So I thought you just did this tremendous, tremendous job with her. You know, that part where she tells Renzai, she goes, well, he turns to her at one point. I think this is in chapter 22 when he goes, oh, this city has made you so cruel, you know, and she turns back and she's like, no. My mercy has just made you complacent.
Yeah.
That was my favorite thing that she said to him the entire freaking fic. Like, it
oh,
was
so
good.
Oh, I'm so glad. Good. And they're both, well, he's not right. He's almost never right. But the reason that was so important for her to say is because, you know, the reason he becomes so angry and heartbroken in the first place is because he witnesses her choosing the twin brother, Omari. That happens, like, during the plot of the show. And her, what was going on there was that, you know, the twin brother had been captured. He was basically imprisoned by, you know, the bad guys, and she frees him. So that was her act of mercy towards Omari. And so to Renzai, her mercy is almost nothing but destructive. That, like, that watching her free this prisoner of war that she later fell in love with and reject him is as damaging as her rejecting him here too. So, and she feels that pretty acutely too. I think early in an earlier chapter, it's not really an argument with Jemiah, but, you know, there's this confrontation and she's like, please don't make me take responsibility for all the casualties in this war. Like, she knows exactly what happened because she freed this twin brother. And from Renzai's perspective, that's like the worst thing that's ever happened to anyone.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. For sure. You know, I also felt like if you could think about the mercy aspect in different ways as well, because I felt like she was also trying to extend some element of mercy to Renzai as well by not outright telling him for a long time that her feelings weren't the same as his. I think maybe she was just hoping he would go away on his own or something.
Pretty much, yeah. She didn't want to hurt him again. And I think she really, really wanted to think that he was better than he is. And the fact is, during the plot of this fic, he is not yet. And I think after, yes, he probably could be. Like, I'm hopeful that this would be his last step to being like, all right, I really gotta figure some shit out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, he kind of forced her at that point to be really, like, honest and really blunt. And have that blunt conversation, you know, which I felt bad for her because I was like, oh, I don't like confrontation personally. So
that, yeah, right.
I can see, oh, that would be really hard from her perspective. But no, this whole thing was just, it was amazing. It was so good. You know, and it made me really curious as, you know, I was reading and after I was through, you know, it made me curious about some things that you said to me because we exchanged a couple of emails here and there. And you had talked to me about like how challenging writing for this particular fandom can be. You talked about like unusual personal connections between the circus artist and the character. So sometimes writing these things can sometimes like feel really close to that RPF line. You know, you mentioned like the abstract nature of each show, how they're, you know, all a little bit different. And there's not really language that goes on in these shows. So you're sort of, you know, inferring a lot of things, perhaps, which requires a lot of world building on the writer's end when you're writing a fan fiction, because you're kind of like having to scratch this stuff together a little bit. So I was just wondering, like, how did these issues like inform the writing of Borderline Suspect for you? And how did you approach those challenges?
Yeah, it was kind of, it took me a while to write. I'd never written a multi-chapter fic before this one. So this just, to me, was a huge undertaking. And I believe I started writing it after the first time I saw the show. And then I've seen it a few times since, and I think maybe even during the writing itself. But in that time, you see different artists perform this role. And I'll compare it again to Broadway. Unlike Broadway, you know, they don't have a script. Whoever plays him is like, all right, here's what he's about. Here's his background. Go for it. And I have seen the same artist play his character completely differently across two different shows. So you kind of have to pick one and then stick with it, with the understanding that someone who sees this later might not come away with the same interpretation of this character. So you kind of have to commit to it. And to do that, you have to look at one particular artist's performance one time. And that can be really personal. They're not putting on a full character in the same way that a traditional actor would. Like, a lot of this does come from the circus artist themselves. So that's where it starts to feel a little RPF-y, because it's like, well, you don't know what they're bringing in to help create their version of this character, especially if you've seen it played multiple different ways. Yeah. So, and I want to be clear, I have no problem at all with RPF. Do what you do. It's not my favorite. It's not for me. And especially because I practice circus arts in my own time, I do have an understanding of like what it takes to fill that role. And, you know, having been in circ fandom for so long, I just have a better sense of it than I think, you know, a first time average viewer. And I wanted to be sensitive to that. Like, I'm really glad the first time when I started writing for this show, I very nearly named Rensai after his first actor. And I am so glad I didn't. The guy has a very unique name. He's a very unique name. It would have worked in the context of the show. I think it would have been fine. But at the time, I had no idea how much time I was going to spend with these people. And now I'm like, great. Very glad I didn't do that.
Crisis averted.
Crisis averted. So yeah, it can't be very personal, certainly more to the artist than to me. Sometimes it feels like, you know, the Rensai I wrote is certainly not one that is in the show, or to an extent ever existed in the show. But because there's so many, it doesn't really matter. And I'm like yearning for the day someone else writes a Kafik so I can see how they named their counselor son, how he behaves, because he's not going to be mine. And I can't even tell them they're wrong because they saw a completely different show from me. I really hope that happens one day. But yeah, and what's also nice is that it affords me the opportunity to write him 1,000 different ways. Like, yeah, he's a dick in this one, but I do have some other fics where he's actually way worse and some where he is way better and does deserve a happy ending. So those are out there too.
I love that. That's cool. What about like the abstract nature and the world building that was necessary? Like, was that tough for you, or was that like freeing as far as like being able to be really creative with what you wanted to do?
It was, I think it was harder than average. I the only major fandom I've written for really besides this one is Mad Max. And that was like a really distinct setting and, you know, all of that information you're given is a lot more than you get in a Cirque show. Here it was a little loosey-goosey where you're like, okay, well, I know they've got a forest. I know there's like a mountain. You know, you have some setting details you can work with. What was kind of lacking was like these four distinct cultures that appear in the show. And they look different. They behave a little different. But that was really fun to explore. Just like, okay, do Denporn have a different accent? Like, what would... I really had to think a lot about, like, what did their trade look like? Like, there's a betrayal element when the siege takes place. So presumably these two cultures had interacted on friendly terms in the past. There's little details like that that you can really scaffold from. And it became really fun, but there really wasn't a lot to work with, which again, no one can tell me I'm wrong because we don't have the details in the first place, which
right.
is nice.
You get to create them.
Yeah, but it was more of a puzzle than average. I think in fic writing a lot, you can lean on the information you're given and build from there. Here, we were given almost nothing compared to more traditional media. And that became part of the fun because I could just decide who interacted in what ways, and I could make up some history. There is so much stuff that exists in my head that could never have made it into that fic because I just needed to have that context in my head.
That's so cool. That kind of reminds me of just another reason why a lot of us just love fan fiction for what it is, because it does let writers fill in those gaps. You know, the gaps that exist and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just so much fun sometimes to see how different writers fill in the different gaps, because there's a thousand ways to do it. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And these are like gaping holes compared to your average gap. So I think this was probably more akin to like writing a big AU, you know, in terms of like the actual experience, than just picking up a setting wholesale and be like, what if this happened? Not that that doesn't present its own set of challenges, but I mean, in terms of having to build something brand new around very little information to anchor you. And then also acknowledging that your audience almost certainly doesn't remember all of the details that they're going to need to recognize the elements of this show. It was a lot of fun, though.
Well, that's good. That's good. And, you know, going back to that thing you said about love and fan fiction, you can absolutely see that this was a labor of love for you. You know what I mean? Like, just how tremendous it was. You could tell that it was done with so much care and so much love. I wanted to ask you one more thing about this whole thing, because you had also mentioned in an email to me that you're fairly certain that your work has been read by artists. I wasn't sure exactly what you meant
yeah.
by that. I was wondering if you could maybe expound on that a little bit. Tell us what you mean by that.
Yeah. So there's this pair of artists who I've just been so fortunate to collaborate with. I'll plug it at the end, but they're called Studio Kawaii. They're on... they're on Instagram, they're on Tumblr, but they found my fic and they were just so complimentary of it. We started creating together. They have some really great art pieces that go with Borderline Suspects and a few others. And someone who had once played the twin brother reached out to them and they were just like complimenting their art and talking through that. And they mistakenly thought that this pair of artists had also written this fic. And so this artist said, I've read that story. I think it's so funny that you think the counselor's son and the twin sister would get together. And I was like, as soon as they told me, I was like, oh my God, I knew it was possible. They said it was funny. That's not the worst thing they could possibly say. I agree. And then I look back on the fact, I'm like, yeah, they're on stage for 5 minutes together. It is funny. This is an insane use of my time. And I've given it so much. so that was pretty eye-opening. But I knew it was always a risk. Because I think, like we were talking about a little bit earlier, I don't know, if I was a creator, I would want to know what people were doing with this. And even though my audience pool is really small, these circus artists, they're real people. And, you know, some of them are nerdy. Some of them probably know about fan fiction. And then they're like, oh, let's just go see if anything was written for my show. And then there you go. There's a lot. There's like 40 of them. They're all by the same person. And they're for an insanely impossible rare pair. So yes, I do know that it has been seen. I don't know by how many. And I think in terms of how they could have reacted, it went pretty well. So I'll take it, but it is embarrassing.
Yeah, I was going to say the mortifying ordeal of being known.
Oh, yeah, it was. I was like, okay, well, I can't stop them. So I'm just going to have to live with it.
as far as fan fiction goes, I feel like that is a really unique thing to have experience with, just because most of us who write fan fiction, we can say pretty definitively that probably most of the people responsible for the canon, whether it's the actors or the writers or the, you know, director, producer, whatever, have probably never read our fan fiction. Probably.
Probably.
Obviously, exceptions exist. I know of a few off the top of my head where exceptions exist. But on the whole, most of us never have to worry, right? About those folks reading our fan fiction. So that's interesting to me that you have the opposite experience where you're like, no, I'm definitively sure that
very sure
this has happened at least once.
But I mean, how else would you have found out, though? This is kind of like the funny element of a small fandom. One of the traits of a small fandom, or the benefits that you would have this close connection with people who are actually involved in the creation. So I don't think in a traditional fandom would you find someone who was involved in a show come forward to fan artists and say, oh yeah, I was involved. And also I've looked at this, I've looked at that. Because it's so tiny, the opportunities like that are much more frequent.
Yes. Yes. Much more frequent and probably likely to happen. So that's so interesting. Has that been, after you found that out, did that at all change the way that you write these days when it comes to fan fiction? Is that something you ever think about now as you're writing?
I mean, I think I always knew there was a chance it would happen, again, just because of the nature of this fandom. So I kind of just put it out of my head and I was like, okay, there's nothing I can do. And by now, my ideas of those characters are so solid that there's really not a lot that could shake it. You know, if this person were to come to me and say, hey, like, here's some insights about the twin brother when I played him, I'd love to hear it. I would love to try to incorporate it. But I've spent so much time that they do feel very mine in a way. So, no, it didn't really impact my writing.
Oh, got it. Oh, well, that's so cool. It's just been so cool to talk to you about the story, because, yeah, it was a tremendous experience to read it. And
thank you.
And I hope that more people, when they hear about it, want to go and check it out. I was very invested in what was going on, and I read it completely fandom blind, right? So very, very cool. Before we go, I wanted to ask you if there were any other fan fiction writers that you wanted to shout out on the podcast today.
Yes. So since I'm back in Scenario World, I have to shout out Jocunda Sykes. I had never listened to Podfic until like 6 months ago, and she just has me on the ground every time. So I can't, if no one's listened to Podfic before, if they've somehow avoided it or just not thought about it, please do it. Start with On the Deficiencies of Translation Spells. When I listen to her work, I'm like, what a time to be alive, that I can not only.
That's amazing. I've heard tremendous things about her. So yes,
she's phenomenal. She does so much great work. Also, one of my favorite whips right now is by Snapescapades. I believe it's Green's Your Color on Tumblr. They are writing a fantastic Snape Lily ballet AU that I think everyone on earth should read. It is truly like they crawled into my skull and was like, took a handful of my lived experiences and then just put them in a fic and then put Snape in it. I'm like, this is a fantasy. It's absolutely beautiful.
It was written for you.
It was. And I don't even like Snilly really. But I'm loving this. So that's a fantastic one. Anything by Perverse Idol. I really like the way that she finds something that works and then just carries on with it. It really taught me to just not worry about retreading old ground. If the ground is good, then just go for it. Like, I love everything she writes. And so I took that away and she's just phenomenal.
I love that. She is wonderful.
A Violetta Danpuff that we mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you like other tiny, tiny fandoms, my longtime friend JD Fair on AO3 writes for like Final Fantasy Tactics and other little things like that. So if you like niche and you like great writing, they are fantastic. Studio Kawaii is the fan artist duo that did so much lovely fan art for my fix. A lot of them are linked in the corresponding chapters, but they're also on Tumblr and Instagram. And then just truly anyone that you find on any Cirque show tag on AO3, like, please just show them love. We are so thirsty for it. And they're really, really good. So if you've ever seen the Cirque show or ever wanted to revisit it, that is a great place to start.
Phenomenal. Thank you so much for those. We'll make sure that the links get up on the show notes. And yes, like, people should check out your story, obviously, but also you did put links to that art in
yes.
the various chapters of your story. And I did take the time to look at those. And Jesus, like, the art is beautiful.
Can you imagine? I just felt so lucky. I'm like, okay, I guess, again, that's another thing that got like 30,000 more words out of me. It's been great.
See? It's a small but beautiful world sometimes out there. It's always awesome. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Sokovia, for taking the time to talk to us today about Cirque and about fan fiction and your story. It's been tremendous. I've had so much fun today.
Thank you so much. This is a pleasure.
Absolutely, for me too. Check out her stories on AO3 and give her some love. You can find the Fanfic Maverick online at fanficmaverickpodcast.com, on Tumblr at fanficmaverickpodcast, on Instagram and Twitter at fanficmaverick, and I can always be reached at fanficmaverick@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, and I will see you next episode. In the meantime, keep on rolling.